Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Helen, Ronnie, and Pieces.
A therapeutic jigsaw.
Where we get famous guests.
Discussing how they deal with stress.
We've only got 10 seconds of music, we'll just beat up.
Sorry. It's all about relaxing and chilling.
Oh, no, you're going to go over now.
Just not winding each other up.
Oh, it's a little late for that.
Go on, quit.
Welcome to Helen, Ronnie in Pieces, the podcast where Ronnie and I do a jigsaw with a massive celebrity and talk about stress and how we cope with it.
A show where we literally and figuratively put ourselves back together.
No, Ronnie, we've already done that on an intro to another podcast.
I know, but that's okay, because I've been listening to loads of podcasts, popular ones, lately, and they all reiterate what they do at the beginning of the podcast. It is the thing to do.
I just think with that way, it's got to be wittier, or it's got to be more of a catchphrase. It's got to have something that really zings in it.
Oh, well, I've got a catchphrase anyway. Funny, you should mention that. I think this would be a good catchphrase. Let's get healing. Let's get healing.
Oh, unbelievable. Yeah, that's really going to catch on. That'll be shouted at us in the street for years. You know, first of all...
Oh, here we go.
Maybe
you've done nothing. You came up with nothing, Hal.
I came up with the alternative title. I came up with Panic Street Preachers, which is the best title this show ever had.
Yeah.
Well, it never had it because nobody ever agreed to it. But anyway, a lot of my ideas get shot down. But anyway, no, Ronnie, we're going to be nice to each other. We're going to stop slagging each other off.
We really do, because it's funny you should say that, because while I've been listening to lots of other podcasts, I've noticed that all the big podcasters like James Gamble and Josh Acaster on Off the Menu and or is it Parenting? They are adorable to each other all the time. They're really nice to each other, you know? That's probably, you know, why they've done so well. And interesting enough, I noticed they've done like 6,500 episodes and you still haven't been asked to be on it. I mean, that's like everybody who's ever been heard of before, ever.
Okay. These are podcasts about cooking, which I'm not into and don't like cooking, even though I am, yes, overweight, and about parenting. And I'm very poor at parenting. I don't have any tips to give anyone.
It's about what you're going to eat before you're executed. And you're fascinated by things like that, isn't it?
The thing is, I'd be really boring about what I'd eat before I was executed because I don't want to admit how. What would you eat before you're executed, Ronnie?
I wouldn't have an appetite.
Really?
You know, I don't know, but I'm sure. I mean, this kind of last. Anyway, let's not get.
I don't mean naff, but I'd go KFC.
And the other thing
that's worth sponsoring us KFC as well, if you're listening. Sorry.
Josh does. They're very succinct and they get to the point. And anyway,
we have a new producer. It's Annabelle.
No. How last week's producer was Annabelle. This is a different. It's another Annabelle.
Oh, Annabelle 2. Like the movie. It's about a haunted doll.
Was it? Oh, okay. Well, brilliant to have you joining the team, Annabelle. I don't know what happened to the last one, because they go very quickly,
they do. But Annabelle, you excited? You've got any exciting plans this week?
When's lunch?
Brilliant. That's a lot of synergy there. Let's move on then.
No, so okay, let's move on. Actually, talking
talking about feeling down, Hal.
Yes.
Do you know what's guaranteed to cheer you up?
What, Ronnie?
A red letter day. This is a day out that makes a perfect present for anyone who needs to have a new experience or recharge. Driving supercars, bungee jumping, or getting a guided tour of your team's favourite stadium. To luxury spa days and tickets to a West End show.
Are they actually sponsoring us?
No, obviously not. I'm just continuing our tactic to attract sponsors.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
By flattering.
Of course. So, yeah, Red Letter Days, we love you. And if you want to push some cash our way, we will definitely be into bigging you up every week. What a fantastic, fun thing that would be.
Slightly concerned they're not still trading, but...
They are. I think they're definitely still operating, and that's one way to get us sued. So, we have a wonderful guest this week. We have a very, very, very good friend of mine. I've known him for a very long
time.
Very
good friend of mine as well.
I know, but he really likes me. Let me do it. He asked me to do his New Year show, actually, this New Year's Eve. Anyway, I didn't see you there. Yeah, Cadogan Hall, me, Chris McCausland, and Omid, so thank you. Anyway, he has worked with wonderful people. He's worked with Robert Redford, Brad Pitt, Oliver Reed, Russell Crowe, and now he meets...
Michael Jackson. No, he didn't.
No, he never. No, he's got a brilliant story about that. And now he's doing a show with Ronnie Ancona and Hal Crutenden.
Yeah, and he's turned lots of other stuff down, hasn't he? Yeah. Awards and bribes and houses and cars. He's a turner downer.
Yeah,
normally
he turns down a lot of stuff and awards, OBEs, and knighthoods.
He's genuinely one of the nicest men in show business and ludicrously talented.
Yeah,
which is so strange because he's so uber nice and yet have all these extraordinary facets. Whereas I think because you don't have as many obvious skills as he does, you know what I mean? That's where you're sort of
what we say about trying to be nicer. What were we actually saying about trying to be nicer?
Oh, okay. It's just that Bob Gamble's not very nice to his partner. And I just remembered that one.
My God, it's like doing a podcast with my gran.
Oh, my gosh. Well, thank you so much for coming on our podcast. I am ready to go. I can talk, can't I?
Yes. I was going to do an official start. Oh, I was going to do the whole build-up and actually give his credits and everything.
No, I was just going to say that this is a proper podcast. We've got a proper producer. Don't look at her. She doesn't really like us. But don't be offended because she doesn't really know who anybody is over 30.
So. Look, let's just go ahead and do the proper introduction that we were going to do.
But should we decide on the background? Which background that Ahmed would feel more relaxed in?
It's nothing to do with what we planned. I thought I was going to be doing all of Ahmed's credits.
So all right. Yeah, well, I don't know.
Ahmed has still said nothing. It's really getting awkward now.
I must
he's not
say,
been introduced.
I've never done a podcast where I've been sat here like a schmuck in the middle for the first minute and a half.
One of the biggest problems on this podcast, Ahmed, is you've got two people who are so self-obsessed that they have difficulty remembering that they're meant to be talking to someone else. So we are going to work hard at it. We're going to let you...
Officially, I'm a fat, needy man pleading for attention. That I would fit very perfectly in between you two.
Oh, so God, maybe you should come on. Maybe you could join the team. We need everyone we can get for numbers on this podcast.
People, you're already asking me to be part of the podcast.
No, if you think you're desperate, that was uber desperate. Look, this week's guest, a comedian, an actor who's appeared in films The Infidel, Gladiator, Notting Hill, Sex and the City 2, and Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again. He was Fagin in the West End production of Oliver and describes himself as the Persian comedy powerhouse. It's Ahmed Jalili.
Wow, what a one. Thank you.
That is amazing because aren't you? You're like an actor, a comic, a writer, a dancer and a singer. That's like five things more than you, Hal.
He's not an impressionist, is he, Ronnie? Because he knows that that's out of fashion and very end of the pier.
Actually, I can do impressions.
Can you do impressions, dude?
I think we can all do Arnold Schwarzenegger. Let's get out of here.
Oh, get the chopper.
How's that?
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Really, really good.
I want to get in the chopper, but he would say, let's get into the mobility scooter.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Can I suggest you don't go into impressionism? We are the pariahs of the comedy world. Just above a juggler in the whole thing underneath a ventriloquist.
I'm talking about one of the top impressionists in the world here.
She is one of the top impressionists. It would be lovely if it was still a sought-after career. Seriously, though.
That's a dig.
Have you met Arnie?
She's upset.
I'm used to it. That's one of the nicer things he said to me. In fact, I might remember that for sincerity.
I thought she'd come back. She just looked crushed.
I'm not. I'm absolutely crushed. No, it will be really handy because a lot of our guests haven't turned up. Mm. So that's going to be really handy, the impressions, because I can suddenly be Olivia Colman when nobody else comes.
Yeah. Oh, whoa!
Isn't it brilliant?
Absolutely. And then I can interview her and say, you know that I would never be on your podcast. You do know that, don't you?
Fantastic impression. Wow.
That is amazing. Before we start the jigsaw, which we are going to be starting and doing, what background would you like, Ahmed? These are your choices. We have Alpine Forest.
That's nice. That's lovely.
Or
which would you feel more relaxed in?
Oh,
can you imagine that this is a beach? I don't expect you to be bobbing around in the actual sea. I don't want you to drown.
Thank you. Alpine Forest looks good because I'm a bit scared of the sea. So, yeah, perfect.
Oh, wow.
Perfect. Okay, good. There you go.
Fabulous.
Thank you.
I really want to ask you about this, Ahmed, because this is, for me, a moment I will never forget. With all the credits that you've done, for me, it was years ago sitting in a cinema, and I think I was away somewhere, so I was by myself, and I almost wanted, because I remember I wanted to tell someone, and I went to see Spy Game, and you were sitting at a table, but you were in a scene with Brad Pitt and Robert Redford.
Yes.
And to me, I would have done a whole... you never mention it. I would have done a tour show based on I'm friends with Robert Redford and Brad Pitt, or I'd have gone on and on and on about it. You're so cool about those things. I mean, and you said now no one talks about it, but you...
No.
That's your surely your biggest name drop, nearly, isn't it?
Yeah, it would be, but it was... I mean, can we do film stories here?
Is yes!
Oh, okay? We love film stories.
Do you?
We don't have many of them.
we don't
get cast.
We of them. But also, he's literally living in a fantasy world about, you know, being with Brad Pitt.
I don't want to be with Brad Pitt. I think that Brad Pitt is the only man that most straight men would go, yeah, I would kiss him. He's got a beautiful
yes,
face.
And he's a really lovely guy.
Is he a good kisser?
Well, I didn't actually kiss him, no, but I did spend a day, actually. There was a whole morning and a half where we did a scene in my car. I was kind of Lebanese CIA.
Oh.
And so I drive him around and he was in the car. And he just got married to Jennifer Aniston. And
he should have stayed with her.
He should have stayed with her. But
I could have told him that over an evening. And maybe a couple of nights.
Really
I would have given him
have.
Some very good advice. I'm just saying.
Well, he asked me for advice. This is the thing. He said to me.
He
was so like, he kept calling me sir. He goes, sir, would you? Because at the time, I think he thought I was older than him. But actually, I think he's only about a year younger than me.
Oh, yes, he's incredibly old.
I looked older than him at the time. And he said, how long have you been married? And I said, at the time, it was 8 years. I said, how long have you been? He goes, oh, just under a year. He goes, do you have any advice? And I said, well, you know, it's a very quick answer. I said, marriages go in three stages. Stage one is blind love, and then stage two is that when you get to see each other's baggage, you don't really get each other, and then you can stay in this phase for like a year, 10 years, and then people might grow apart because you don't understand each other's baggage. But if you work through it, you can get into stage three, where it's not perfect, but you can live with each other's difficulties. But stage two is the most difficult thing, get through. And then he said, oh, I got to take this phone call. He took a phone call, and he just circled the car for about 2 or 3 minutes, and he sat down ashen-faced. I said, are you all right? He goes, I think I've just gone into stage two, which means it was Jennifer Aniston when they had their first big fight.
Oh, wow.
And then stupidly, this is the year 2000, we were filming it. And then stupidly, you know what it's like when you're on tour, you speak to some regional newspaper, like it was Cardiff regional thing. Because have you got any funny stories? I said, I never kiss and tell. He goes, didn't you do Spy Game a few years ago? I said, yeah, but I never. He goes, you must have a story. So I said, okay, I've got this one little story. I told her the story. She goes, that's great. A week later, I have an agent from America saying, what have you done? What have you done? I said, why? He goes, have you seen the TMZ website? I said, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? He goes, go on it now. And I went on. It's a TMZ. And the headline says, comedian spills that he is the reason why Brad and Jen broke up. And there was a picture of me, very jowly, very fat, with a microphone, and a picture of Brad and Jen ripped in two with me in the middle.
Like as if
a comedian admits to breaking them up, which this story had come from some regional news in Cardiff. So I had to send an apology to Brad Pitt. I just mentioned this thing. And then they came back and said, you must never do this. This can ruin you in Hollywood. You'll never work again. And all this kind of stuff came
that
out. So be careful.
That's a really good note, though, because okay, this is a lot to say, but I would leave the woman I'm with for Jennifer Aniston. But I think she'd let me. I think she'd understand.
Because
I've always loved Jennifer Aniston, so much so that I've thought it through to the extent of, because I don't have a career in America. I wonder,
or here,
she's
even.
Not much, but whether she'd live in Enfield. But if I ever get together with Jennifer Aniston, I don't want you in my life.
Do you know,
you
I'm
will
really
then
concerned.
Tell a story that
I'll
will
tell
break
a story
us up.
You, yeah.
Already, this is too much. The thought of Brad Pitt calling him sir.
Yes,
that
yes,
is going to be
a,
that is going to be a fantasy.
But Brad
now,
and I can never be close. If I'm with Jennifer, there'll always be a tension between us.
You're serious about you?
Would you leave your husband for Brad Pitt, yes. And I'd leave my girlfriend for Jennifer Aniston?
The thing is, Danny, is I just know, because I'm more of a realist than Hal, is I know that Brad Pitt wouldn't be interested in me. Whereas Hal, quite openly. Bless him. There is an element of him that thinks that Jen
both,
would fancy him.
But they're both
him.
Very lovable people. I think Jen would fancy him.
I think I'd make her feel very at ease because I think I'm obviously of a much lower status career-wise, looks-wise, and everything. And I hope that she'll listen to this. But she's such a stunningly good comedic actress, as well as being beautiful and being, I think, a really lovely person.
Have you seen the Good Morning Show? Have you seen the Good Morning Show?
Yes.
Isn't that fantastic?
No, she's got such depth. I think to live with someone that's constantly telling you how fantastic you are must be great. And that's
there you go. This whole podcast is an advert.
Are you enjoying Jennifer Aniston fan fiction podcast? Welcome back. Now, look, Jigsaw. Darling, Do you like jigsaws?
I don't like jigsaws because when I was a child, I was given a five-piece jigsaw when I was 5 years old and I had no clue what it was. I wasn't even told what I was supposed to do. I just looked at it and they said, are you okay? And after that, people thought I was thick. It was just of a robin. It was five things. And the team said, no, no, look. And I tried to put them together. No, no, no. So I have a bit of trauma around this. So.
Do you know anything about the right way to start? Then you don't.
No, what is the right way to start?
I think it's edging. But that's, I've heard quite...
You find the edges.
I've heard it's a rude, edging is a rude word
is that
for kids think.
Is it?
I don't know. Annabelle giggles.
So where would you even find
the edges? Do you know
the
bizarre thing is that considering that Hal and I are so full of self-loathing and indeed mutual loathing,
yes,
we have chosen to do a picture of ourselves in the jigsaw, and we can't even look in
that's
the mirror.
That's
so why did we do that? I tell you why we did it, Ormond, because Hal had this thing that about the title Us in Pieces, and therefore it had to correlate with the picture of us in the jigsaw, which now I think has come back to bite us so
that's very clever.
So heavily.
No, this whole thing with jigsaw puzzles, because I think as we get older, we're always trying to find lost pieces of ourselves, and that it does get lost.
You're so
it is.
Depth.
I mean, that's what I understood with this podcast. I thought that you're doing jigsaw puzzles. You're trying to find
Jesus,
those
you want
lost
a depth.
Isn't that
so
the idea?
True.
I thought that was the idea.
Well,
it is.
We would do that if we weren't such shallow people. So we would find that sort of... Sorry if I could speak for you, Robin.
No, never underestimate how superficial I am.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a big mistake. No, it is the same because it's about stress, isn't it? Because we're stressy people and we think that anything
But we are people who are... As performers, I think we're amongst the most stressed people. I think I hide it from you quite well, didn't I? When I did that gig with you, you don't think...
No, I thought you were just a little bit stressed about where to go to eat on New Year's Eve. We did on New Year's Eve. And there was no... And I was saying, Hal, you're not going to find anywhere on New Year's Eve, which hasn't been booked, so...
I was very stressed because my girlfriend...
A new partner
...who is going to be... I'm going to be leaving for Jennifer. But that was a massive moment because that...
First time she'd come to see you.
First time she'd seen... She'd seen me before. She'd seen me in November.
Yeah.
But it turned out that I met her son because she was with her son, who was 10 years old, got in and saw the show. So I had to do a gig in front of her and her 10-year-old son, who was looking at this man that his mum was dating. Mm. So they really enjoyed it. Oh, I had a good gig. It was fine, wasn't it? And I wasn't too rude about her. I do one joke about her, which is because she's French that grew up in Australia for half of her childhood. And I was saying, half French, half Australian. On the one hand, she's a little bit racist. And on the other hand, she's really, really racist. but that is totally not
good
true
joke.
To anybody listening.
She's
just got a promotion at work. She's very important.
Can we talk about your chat up lines with Jennifer later? Because let's maybe don't start that as an opener with Jen.
Yes.
Listen, because you're ludicrously successful, but do you get stressed by work, Omid? Do you get stressed by performing?
Yes, I do. Up until recently, used to get a terrible dry mouth going on stage, but I find just a bit of chewing gum. Someone said, don't you use chewing gum? And for the last 3 or 4 years, I've just chewed some chewing gum and I've never had dry mouth again. Just literally moist.
Do you
mouth.
Still do your act or do you just go on
I then
and
collapse.
Chew?
I can have a complete mental collapse.
Just chew.
But I do get nervous. It's always
but you get more nervous with stand-up, the different things you do that you get less stressed with or more stressed with?
I think whenever you're working with other people, because even now we're here together, which is a huge joy being with other performers. But also when you're working alone as a stand-up, you've built your show in a way so it's unstressy as possible. I have a really good opening act who just deals with the crowd before. So it's all like laid out for me. But meeting cast members that's always quite... Social anxiety is something that as comics, because we work alone, to be having those first impressions, being with other people is quite stressy. So the very first couple of days is always... Something I always get stressed by. I think we all do, don't you? You must get stressed as well.
Me? Never. I've just done a film about making porn films for the troops in the 40s. And everybody in it was in their 20s apart from me. That's the definition of stress for a middle-aged woman. Plus the fact there was a lot of nudity. Not from me. It wasn't a horror film.
But don't you think that's the interesting thing when you said that thing of socialising and meeting people, that people think performers are... very relaxed about socialising. And actually, they're probably the opposite. Because I think it's a control freak. There's a way in which particularly stand-up is about, you know, you're comfortable because you're controlling a social situation.
Yes.
And my problem is I go to dinner parties and act like that and talk too much. So it's actually, it's almost a place where very They're quite damaged people, stand-ups. I'm not dragging you down.
No, about that.
Ronnie, I'll drag
you down. Lot. We think, well, how can you say I was dominating? I'm just being entertaining.
Yeah.
No, you'd be really good to sit down and ask people questions. I said, yeah, but they're so boring. You see, that's what I'm saying. You're so self-obsessed. But I think this is the thing. Social anxiety always hits you, especially when you're around higher profile people. I'll never forget being at this party in Los Angeles. And I didn't know whose party it was. And someone said, it's a rapper. But I misheard his name. It was actually the rapper Ludacris. But for some reason, I remembered his name as Ridiculous. So when they introduced me, they go, this is Ahmed. And I said, why do you call yourself Ridiculous? And he says, my name's Ludacris. I said, I know. Why would you call yourself that? And then before I knew it, someone grabbed me and just took me out. And they said, you're out. I said, why are we in the car park? He goes, just get out. You really upset him. Just go.
Oh.
I said, but his name is Ridiculous. He goes, no, his name is Ludacris. And I said, I thought he was saying calling himself Ridiculous is ludicrous. And I said, he should have called himself that. Ludicrous would have made sense. So anyway, I think that was all just social anxiety.
Well, you know, it is difficult, especially for me and Hal, because nearly everybody we meet is of a higher profile, we noticed from us, and is of a hierarchical level. So we have ascertained that we are the only comics left in the UK who have not been asked to do Taskmaster.
I'm sorry to ruin your narrative, but I haven't been asked either.
Are you sure?
Do you know we're an elite?
Did your agent just not go? How ridiculous! Ahmed will never do that.
That's probably what happened. But I have never been aware.
You see, just as we were climbing up, thinking even Ahmed hasn't been in Taskmaster. No, straight back down.
It was
an agent going. Yeah. You gotta be joking. He's a Hollywood star. He's friends with Brad, and Ludacris.
Why do you want to do Taskmaster so much?
Don't you want understand, it's a stamp, isn't it? Isn't it?
Is
like
it?
Having a wool stamp on your back.
It's,
I thought it
is
was.
For it is for comics who are struggling at a certain level, like me and Ronnie.
Or age.
It's friends who aren't in showbiz who say to you, you should get on that Taskmaster.
Yeah,
and you go, oh yes, I'll just bloody call them. You know, the idea that it's not competitive, everybody says to me, why aren't you on that Taskmaster thing?
And I
go,
well, for some reason, every London cab driver knows who I am and they feel it's all right to go, that Catherine Tate, she's done well, isn't she?
Oh.
They go through every single comic because you're not on as much.
Anyway. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
You should get yourself back on telly board. You go, yeah. But I think we're doing ourselves down too much now. And
yes,
really,
we
really
are.
Damaging our careers.
Purposely.
Can I just say, I'm loving every single bit. You've got to keep all of this in. I'm enjoying every single second of this.
We were empowering ourselves.
Yes.
Now.
Yes.
This
yes.
is about we us trying to be more positive.
More says, and now what's happened?
I feel quite positive. I mean, Ahmed, I say about if you'd like to join us on this podcast permanently, but maybe just you and me as a sort of...
No, because that is... No,
that is... Already getting rid of Ronnie.
That's two plump needy men. That's not going to work. Funny you talked about comics, opening for comics. I first really properly met Hal when we were doing a corporate together, and it was hundreds and hundreds of drunk businessmen, I think, at the Grosvenor House. We had to split the gig. He made me go on first and warm up for him.
There was absolute... You're such a liar. The rules were you went on first, and then we did the awards together.
No, I know, but the comedy bit.
Did you get paid more? We never checked.
No, we didn't.
You must have got paid.
They didn't get paid.
I saved the gig. I saved the gig in the second half.
I'm always doing lots of stuff for charity, and I find out later that people are being paid and get an OBE for it as well, often.
Oh, look, Annabelle. Look, she doesn't look. She's not happy. Quick.
Oh, she's doing that death stare. That means we're meant to go to adverts.
Adverts, don't cross her.
I'm David Mitchell, and in my new podcast, which of course I don't need to do because I'm already super successful, as the young people say, I'll be talking to my famous friends about meditating with macrame. That's Meditating with Macrame, with me, David Mitchell.
Hello, I'm Stuart Lee, and this week on my long-running podcast, Loosen Up with Lego, I'm going to be joined by the amazing Ahmed Jalili. Ahmed's not just a comedian, but he's an actor, a writer, singer, and a dancer. And that is already five things more than that Hal Cruttendon, who just made his career on going, oh, am I gay? Am I not gay? What do you think? Do I sound a bit like Tony Blair? Do I? Did you see me and Mrs. Dalloway with Vanessa Redgrave and all my posh actor friends? Did you? Back in the 90s when I was young. Yeah, yeah.
Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, And you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Sorry, yes. Robert, I love corporate stories. Can we just explain to people listening? Corporates.
Corporates
are, I think, I am really...
It's like comic prostitution, no, isn't it?
No, because I do a lot of them, Ronnie, so
exactly.
I don't want to burn my career there. I'm absolutely excellent at them, but yes. They are the hardest thing a comedian does.
They're horrible.
Because you're trying to fit comedy into a work. Yeah, yeah. So you're doing awards in your... Like last night I was doing a wonderful financial technology awards, which is something I know nothing about. So you're sort of trying to do jokes about things you don't know about. Sorry, Omid, what was the one you were doing?
Just so you know, there is the Grosvenor House Hotel.
I was there the other day.
That's where we did ours, Ronnie.
Okay, all right. I asked one day, what happens if things go wrong? They say, we've got a secret exit called the chute. But no one knows where it is, but people come in through the chute if they're really high profile. And they go out through the chute. So I was hosting a corporate at the Grosvenor House, and the main act was the Jackson 5. Obviously, and this is 2014, so Michael Jackson had been already dead for 5 years. So, and they explain when the Jackson 5 come on, they do 45 minutes. They don't do encores. You don't look them in the eye. You just introduce them. They will go on. And then when they go off, don't even try and bring them on. So I said, fine. It was a big charity evening. There must have been about 1,200 people there. It went really, really well. I said, please, we welcome the Jackson 5. Everyone rushed onto the dance floor. They did their set. And Jermaine Jackson was wearing that jacket that Michael Jackson wore when he was doing the moonwalk.
Yeah.
So a lot of people were screaming, Michael, Michael, this. And he was just like saying, I'm Jermaine, and I was, and then they finished, and they went off, and they left through the chute, and I never saw where the chute was. Okay, they said they're gone. So I went on. I said, ladies and gentlemen, the Jackson 5. People say, get them back on. I said, they're not coming back on. And I started really winding them. I said, we've raised £900,000 tonight, which constitutes half my fee. I hope you'll pay that in increments. So, and people say, not funny. Get Michael back. And this woman kept screaming, bring Michael. And I don't know why. I just said, bitch. Michael died 5 years ago. And the place went nuts. They were all trying to get onto the stage. Oh, security came on and they took me off to the side and then they put another band on. And then there were people waiting for me at the front to confront me. And the security goes, we can't get him out. Someone says, put him through the chute. Open the chute. And I said, oh, the chute. And the chute is basically disguised as a mirror. And this guy comes and just flicks this thing with a card. And this door opens, and I went through the door. They said, just go down and then go up, and you can get out. Then you come out around the back of the hotel, then you escape. So I went down, and they shut the door really quickly, and it was dark. And I didn't have the torch on my phone, and I was going, oh, my God. And it took me about 10 minutes to creep out, and I saw this slight light, and I opened the door, and I was around the back. I didn't know where I was. And then I came round to the front of the hotel and they went, there he is! And they chased me again. I walked all the way back to the front where I wasn't supposed to be. And they ran after me and I jumped in a cab and I ran away. So they said, you're very lucky that we've only ever opened the chute for Elizabeth Taylor, the Jackson 5, and now Omid Djalili.
Oh, my God, that is literally the best story I've ever heard.
That's a good
But I do want... Can I just point out something, though, to any corporate bookers listening, that obviously if you use words like bitch, you shouldn't really be booked, and I should have... if you're thinking... If you're
the only detail he's picked up.
If you're thinking of booking Omid... And it's just, he's too dangerous, book me, because at least I'm safe.
He's very,
I'll do a good job. I won't need to use the chute. I thought the chute was going to be like a slide as well.
Do you know the other thing about the Grosvenor House Hotel? It used to be an ice rink.
Yes.
In the thing. So when I've fallen on my arse a few times performing there, it's kind of felt okay. History repeating itself.
It was lovely because when we did our gig and when you failed quite badly then, it was like she's been through this before. So it was almost like you were expecting the no laugh.
Oh, really?
It was brilliant. She's brilliant. I'm joking.
It's a bulletproof act.
He would have been. He would have been.
It is a bulletproof fact.
Any corporate bookers out there? Ronnie Ancona.
Ronnie Ancona.
According to Omid Jalili and Hal Cruttendon, is a bulletproof act.
Has anyone realised, by the way, that we can't? Has anybody got even one piece together?
I've got three bits together, Hal.
I'm just collecting blues.
Yeah, I'm putting the blues to one side.
I've done four already.
Because the blue is my shirt, so that's
yes.
So Omid, I've got a question for you.
Yes.
As we are all of
it's like little
this
kids.
Is so disorganized.
Is it like 3-year-olds?
This is a brilliant podcast.
Some people, as you get older, some people become more stressed and some people become less stressed because your aspirations change. I mean, I used to think it would be nice to be a film star. Now I'd settle for a regular bowel habit. That's how things how much aspirations can change as you get older. Some people I know, as they get into middle age, obviously I haven't experienced that yet,
as Hal
has, but as you get into middle age, you'll suddenly, some people go, well, you know, I am who I am. I know who I am. You're a little bit wiser and you're a bit more relaxed about things. Or you're the other way, you're in Sniper's Valley.
Sniper's Alley.
Or Valley. Or the alley or the valley. Well, you know what I mean.
Double down, double down, Ronnie.
People in the valley or the alley, does that matter? I'm just saying that you're surrounded by death and illness and things are changing. And in comedy, you know, if you're a doctor or something, as you become older and more respected and more experienced, it correlates with the amount of respect. It's a total inverse in our business. So as you're getting older,
people...
Yes, good point.
You started on a question and went on into a sort of... self-obsessed kind of my life so
think
hard.
You are more relaxed as you're getting older or less relaxed thinking, I've got to achieve this, and this, etc., etc.?
No, but this is a very good question because I believe the world does not belong to 17 and 27-year-olds. There's no reason why we shouldn't have, as middle-aged people, a fabulous second act of our lives. I'll never forget a thing Carlos Santana said, that he was inducted into the Music Hall of Fame when he was 52, and he's never been so insulted in his life. He goes, you usually go into the Hall of Fame when your career's over. He goes, I'm pregnant with at least two or three more albums. And he just said, this is ridiculous. We need to have more of an idea that all the wisdom of the world is not with kids. And surely if we just look after our bodies, we have so much more to contribute. And I think that principle that we can have a fabulous second act of our lives is something that really calms me down and makes me realise that actually I can achieve anything I want to achieve.
But do you think also that's partly because you've had a really good first act, whereas our first act was more of a struggle? I'm hoping my second act is much, much better than my first act. Whereas you've already been there. You've been, you know, Robert Redford, Brad Pitt, you've played Fagin in the West. You've been at the top.
No. But see, I never watched back my first Live at the Apollo when I watched it about a year ago. And I thought, oh my God, I look like a genuinely crazy, like, where did they find this guy? And I think that's why everyone talked about that first, because we never had a kind of stand-up comedy show. And I was basically plucked from... Jack D just said, I really want to have him on. Mm. And I think it was an ethnic diversity quota as well. But I look back at myself, everything about that set, the way I look, I'm bloated, I'm ill, I'm wearing the wrong clothes. The clothes I wore made me look 100 times fatter. And I was dancing, and people think I'm that person. So when they meet me, goes, oh, hey, dancey guy. And I think, I'm not that person at all.
Yes.
I'm a very together, socially conscious human being. How dare you talk to me like that?
But those were
through the transformative power of comedy, I've helped myself.
So I actually do material about doing Royal Variety.
Before, yes,
because I was slightly blown away by doing Royal Variety. And it's also something I like to go on about it with Ronnie because she never got asked with.
I got asked to do a gig right in front of them in their living room, Charles and Camilla. Well, the material was it went very well, but it was just that I didn't know it was in Buckingham Palace. I was very underdressed and had a blow dry.
Yeah. Well,
I was a bit traumatised.
That's probably why they didn't have you back for Royal Variety, because that was like a rehearsal.
And I got a lovely letter from him, handwritten, and then a PS, never come back here again.
Those letters mean nothing. But my point was...
That's tremendously cutting.
But
carry on.
But, I mean, I got asked to Royal Variety. I was totally unknown, and I got on it in 2009, and it literally actually turned me from being a hardcore Republican into going, oh, bless them, and they're kind of love. I'm a bit like that about the Royals. I find them so totally charming that I kind of go, maybe it does bring a stability that we have these people that we kind of love, who we know. But the whole thing will fall apart because eventually someone will go, why am I born into a system where I can't choose what my job is? The little Prince George knows what he's going to do. I just think that's obscene in the modern world. But anyway, I quite like the individuals in it. Now, he really likes you, Charles, doesn't he?
On his 60th birthday, then the 70th birthday, which was We Are Most Amused and Amazed, he was very good about that because you're not supposed to do anything political, but I just felt I had to do a Brexit routine because it was so in the zeitgeist. When you do your run through, he goes, that was good, but don't do the Brexit stuff. And I just thought, why not? And so on the night, I just did it.
Yeah.
And then afterwards in the lineup, I said, I'm so sorry I did that. He goes, because that Brexit routine was marvellous. I said, they'll probably cut it. He goes, they're not going to cut that. It's my show, my rules, like that. And they kept it in. So, and I felt very happy about that.
You haven't got any OBEs or MBEs yet, have you?
No, I would refuse it. I would refuse it, absolutely.
That's really amazing.
No, is that not enough? Do you want to be a dame?
Yes, you've got to go straight.
You want to be a lord?
She said it!
Exactly. To be a lord.
I want to be a dame.
No, it's true, though, darling.
So marvellous.
If you get an OBE, then you know what I mean? If you get a knight, you're going to have to tie. You might as well go for the... But is that... No, that's not what you mean, is it?
Well, I think, look, at the end of the day, I was very, very honoured to do the Queen's very last appearance.
Oh, my God.
Which was for her I think it was her Platinum Jubilee. And they asked me to play something called The Herald. And it was a very remarkable, because ITV just said, the Queen has asked for you. I said, rubbish. I don't believe that for a second. So they got the Queen's horseman, the person who was organising, because, yes, he's very funny. So she chose me. And I said, what is The Herald? Because The Herald was in those days the person who would connect the populace with the royal family. So we need someone who was a bridge between the two. So we want you to host it. They even asked me to script edit the whole thing. But I had to wear this stupid costume with kind of mustard-coloured stockings. But it was good because you could get to roast, like, all these big events like Guy Fawkes Night. For most other places, people trying to blow up the parliament would be a cause of national disgrace. Yeah. In Britain, it's an excuse for a party. And apparently the Queen laughed at that. So they told me afterwards, when she died, I got an email saying, you're the last person to make her laugh in public. I said, was that before or after when she met Liz Truss? And they said, yes, it was before. So actually, in that sense, it was a nice thing. And actually what happened was I did the warm-up on the night because it's in Windsor Castle and there are 5,000 people there. I said, let me do a warm-up of this, because when the Queen comes in, it's usually this hushed reverence. And I said to the crowd, this may be the last time we see her, so why don't we give her a cheer? So for the first time she came and the crowd went nuts, the horses were spooked, but apparently they told me that that was her favourite moment ever entering into a place, because she goes, everyone's so boring, it's also quiet, but there's 5,000 people going crazy. It really made her feel loved. So I feel very happy to be part of an event that made her feel loved before she went.
That's amazing.
Isn't that sweet? Yeah.
You've got so many bits of your career that I would go, I can relax now and not be stressy about. You've done so many things.
Well, even just one of them.
Yeah, just one. Just for me, it was the Brad Pitt, Robert Redford moment. But, you know, you're saying, talking about the second act and stuff, do you have a relaxation, though, about looking back and really appreciating the things you've done? Or is it constantly, what's the next thing, what's the next thing?
No, you have to be grateful. I think that's the most important thing. You have to be very grateful. As I say to my crowd, I'm so grateful even to have a platform. I said, and I'm very happy to be on stage. And I tell the crowd, I'd much rather be on stage than sat where you are watching this shit. I'll tell you that much. I just tell them, because this is like crap. But I think that you have to be grateful. But at the same time, there are always projects which are, you know, passion projects, all things that, and sometimes you find, amazingly, those passion projects don't get made. Yeah. And you have to really push. You have to really like, okay, they don't want it. How do we come at it from a different way? Okay, literally no one is commissioning new comedies. No one. Everyone is too nervous. I'm very lucky to be in the second series of The Change with Bridget Christie. That's the only thing they've commissioned, Channel 4. Oh. They just don't have any money. Streamers have the money. Now, Apple TV, maybe Netflix, but everyone else, they don't have any money. It's difficult to get things on telly, so you have to try and find other ways to fund them and still get them done, but that's a push. So the most important thing is to have a passion and to have that thing that you want to do that really comes from your heart.
Exactly.
Do you have such an unsymmetrical shirt on?
And I've got four pieces together, by the way, down
here. Look how much I've got.
But that bit, it's actually down there. We're in the wrong bit for it. Is it true?
Does it matter?
Is it a lie, this? Because I think this is really interesting. Did you fake your exams or results to get... Did you somehow fake your way into uni?
Oh, God, yes, I did.
Oh!
It's true.
Okay. Second question. If you could have the opportunity to fate yourself into uni, why did you choose University of Ulster, Cambridge?
No. Well, no, first of all, when you've got no grades at all, I think I had like a C and a couple of E's.
But you're so clever.
What happened was when you go into the what was called the Ucker Clearing, UCAS now, you have a chance to fill out your thing. And I just put in different grades. Because I put in B, C, D, E instead of it was a C and three E's.
Yeah.
But, and I went, and one of the certificates, I literally drew a little bum on one of the E's to make it into a B. And they kind of bought it. I think they put it into the computer. And then when I arrived, I went to the University of Ulster, which was the only offer I had. And they goes, well, let's go and check out the printout and just see if your grades check out. And amazingly, the lies were printed out in a computer printout. So whatever I wrote, someone just must have just put it straight in. Because even at that university, which was the worst university at the time, where you could only get in with like a B and two C's, I got in with a B, C, D, E. The B was a lie.
God.
That's the way to do it, guys.
If you're listening, kids.
Yes. Don't do that.
No. No, listen, what did you study?
I studied English, economics and French. Those were my three. And English. There was English literature and English language. I did two English. Not bad for a thickie, yeah. But having said that.
I'm saying that because you're ludicrously intelligent.
But this is the thing.
Did you do English at uni then?
Then I did English and drama at university. It was a joint degree and there was 168 of us. And when I went to see the results, where there's a printout, I looked at the bottom and kept going and I saw I was eighth. I was eighth out of 168 people.
Brilliant.
So it just goes to show that the A-levels do not define you intellectually.
No.
So there you are, Hal.
Thank you.
You take that to
heart. I didn't do badly.
But you did well. What did you
do? No, I did okay. I did actually, I don't like to say what I actually did, what I actually got, because I was, in my school, it was seen as a total cock-up.
Really?
They were going, we're very disappointed. I went for a talk with the teacher where we thought we were Oxbridge, and I thought I was Oxbridge, and I ended up getting I had a girlfriend that I really liked. As you can tell with my Jennifer Aniston thing, I tend to put my life on hold when I meet the right woman. And so I was in love with this woman when I was about 17. And yeah, I was young for the year as well. They used to put us ahead.
Yeah.
So what that school was like at the time. And so I ended up going to York on BBC. I got
York young is people, a good
BBC
crowd.
Was just an okay result in the 80s. But my school was a disaster.
Did you do York? Because my son went to York University.
Oh, did he?
Yes, yes.
What did you do in York?
He did drama as well, but he came to see you in York. And my son came to see my son who was at university. He came home and said, I have just seen the best comedian ever. Dad, have you heard of Hal Crottenden? I said, what do you mean? He opened for me. He goes, he opened for you?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? People, this guy is amazing.
How much did he pay you?
People of all ages. I have that.
You?
Just because that's never happened to you, Ronnie. all ages.
Pay.
People of all ages. That's the thing about me. I have such appeal around across.
You do.
You know, across range of ages. Because when some people just see it. They just see that.
He was
genius.
20 at the time.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, we have some very last quick questions.
Yes, yes, go ahead, go ahead.
Quickly, okay?
All right, here we go.
There's been very little structure.
I can't believe that we haven't done...
I've put four pieces together of this jigsaw. But yes, three quick-fire questions. Would you rather have to complete in one sitting a 200-piece naked puzzle of yourself or a 5,000 one of plain blue sky?
I would rather kill myself than do either of those two things.
I don't believe that was an option, Mr. Ahmed. You've got to
Okay, blue sky. Definitely blue sky.
Blue sky.
Oh, right, so you don't like nudity. I don't like nudity.
I don't like nudity.
No, it's horrible.
I used to come out of the shower when I played football and people would look at me and go, oh, nice suit, because I was so hairy.
Who would be the worst person you can imagine being trapped in a room with nothing but a puzzle for entertainment? Don't say us.
I was going to say you.
Don't say us.
Who would be the worst person? Oh,
you've
God.
Got a puzzle.
So
you're
I have
trapped
to.
In a room.
I would say
that's not fair.
Ben Elton, circa 1984.
Oh,
because I don't think.
Well,
he had this motor mouth kind of thing, and I don't think I'd get a word in edgeways.
But has it not been slightly the experience on this podcast for you?
No, I got a few words in.
No, I thought so.
But it's been very therapeutic for us. Thank you.
It has been incredible. Actually, final,
so
very
much.
Quick final question.
Yeah,
yes
yes or no? Yeah, or just
okay, yes
yeah,
or
very
no.
Quickly.
Who do you prefer, me or Ronnie?
I would rather kill myself than answer that question.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you, Ahmed. Thank you so much for coming in.
This has been fun.
Thank you so much.
I've really learned something
as well.
We
adore you. We're a little bit sad about the that you going on to Stuart Lee's Loosen Up with Lego podcast. But apart from that, it's been amazing.
But I think it's been the beginning of maybe this could become a three-person podcast or maybe just a two-man podcast for the future.
Because male, female, double, better, I think. Just saying that, you know, more unusual.
This has been an experience of a lifetime. I want to thank you. I love the fact the jigsaw thing is absolutely completely useless thing to hang this whole... He did four pieces. I love that. I love the silliness of it. This whole experience is a total waste of time. I have to say, it's been so enjoyable. And that's the perfection of a podcast like this, that it's a beautiful waste of time. And I want to thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for coming. You have such a time. I want to marry you now.
I want to marry him.
Thank you very much.
Oh, what a lovely man Ahmed is.
Just one of the sweetest people. I think, in comedy. What a beautiful mantra he gave us. He said that this was a beautiful waste of time, our show. Which is so... I think it's a waste of time. I agree with two-thirds of that statement.
But it's the beautiful that's unusual. Yes. Because normally people say bloody. The way that he used beautiful instead of bloody. Little disappointed that he's been, you know, what with us having a very obviously original... give me an idea, and that he's done all those things with other comics, you know, the games.
Oh.
It's very difficult to be original these days.
Exactly, and I reckon Ahmed's so nice. He doesn't do a lot, but it's probably quite hard. If you ask him directly, it's quite hard for him to say no. And it's because I asked him directly to do the... This is actually one of the few guests I got.
That you were Martin Roberts from Homes Under the Hammer.
Strangely not, though he did. I had to keep correcting him because he was nearly calling you Nigella.
Anyway, yes. Fan Corner.
Fan corner, Ronnie. We have fan mail. We must have fan mail.
Yes. Now, how? Because I know we've had an awkward little thing with this section before, this feature. But this is an email from Gareth. And this is actually a genuine fan letter. Not the thing that we've had on the previous shows, like the cease and desist letters and the PCN things. This is real. This is real. Yeah. Oh, hi, Ronnie. Ronnie, I've been a fan of yours for such a long time. I've always loved you and what you do. I genuinely think that you are the best entertainer the UK has ever produced.
And read the next line.
What? Just thought I'd drop you a line to find out if you're still in show business. Well, that's just ridiculous. That's ridiculous. You should have known that. It's ridiculous, isn't it? Thank you, everybody.
See you, everyone.
See you next week.
Bye. Bye.
Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.